let's rise and face the east for the Sufi invocation.
Again, with palms upward in the staring receptive mode, ready to receive the bestowal of blessings. And remember the S in the report, as it is said on the head of Darya, to the Anai coming towards the heart. Feel so different. Is that the energy of that word? Instead of towards the heart.
Towards the one. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. The only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Kindness.
And take this blessing and pour it over and through your entire being. Letting it flow through you all the way down to the core of this planet and into the infinite universe. Maybe others will be joining us.
Thank you so much. So as we're settling down, I do have a couple of public service announcements, and I apologize for sort of making a public announcement of this because I'm not sure it's entirely appropriate. However, it's the most efficient way to let it be known. I know that there are a few of you that have traveled for some distance and maybe want a little bit of individual time. I'm not sure. I'm always available by phone and email, but for those that are interested, Cabrera, are you taking the appointments? I think the most efficient way is 20-minute appointments beginning at 20 after 4 today, 3 each day, today, tomorrow, and Tuesday. So you can see Cabrera, and I may ask for other people to help with being timekeepers and things so that myself nor the person that I'm meeting with has to be concerned about that. But we will be very diligent and pithy in our meetings, okay? So that's mostly for my personal students. If there are other people that feel there's a need, to me it's not about chit-chatty. If we're really tuned, we kind of know what's going on with each other, so I probably don't need too much information, but we can sit together, and if there's questions about practice and things, see Cabrera. No. Okay. Oh, the other public service announcement is this, do I only have two? Some people may be interested in some of the practices that we're doing. They are in this, I have extra papers in mine. It's not quite so hefty. Cabrera is holding up. We put together these little practice manuals or practice packets, and we ask for a donation of 20 for those. And also at the end conclusion on Tuesday, I've compiled these teachings and they'll also be available. We'll just again ask for a $5 contribution to kind of cover expenses. Anything that comes into the kitty goes to the bigger kitties. It doesn't come into my kitty. or my booty, or whatever. Just FYI, this is not a money-making adventure. This is a labor of love and service. So I'd like to begin with a short reading by this book called The Flower Garden of Vinayak Khan. And this is a beautiful small little book that's gone. This is the second edition of it. It was originally made in the time when Murshid was alive and he was going to Holland. And the woman that did all the illustrations, it was a very famous Dutch illustrator for children's books. And she and her husband started the Sufi Center in The Hague in Holland. And so they produced this book. So there are quotes with these beautiful images that she's painted of Murshid. And it may be of interest to some of you, and some of you may have it, or even the original form. But I thought this was a beautiful, beautiful teaching as a way of tuning us to this idea of mystic relaxation. The ears of whose heart have listened to the word of God have first accomplished stillness in their life. And what an atmosphere such persons can produce. What effect their presence has. It is more than healing, more than medicine. A man with a perfectly stilled and comforted and rested mind will at once raise up another who is going through distress or restlessness or pains or ill temper or worry or anxiety. The very presence of one whose mind is stilled gives such hope, such inspiration, such sympathy, such power and life. All the heavenly properties run so smoothly and so freely from the person whose mind is stilled that his words, his voice, his presence all react upon the minds of others, and as he stills his mind, so his very presence becomes healing. And one more quote of Murshid's. Well, there'll be many this afternoon, but I wanted to read this. I think this is so poignant and so beautiful. It's from the Gamakakas, and that means the feelings of the poet's heart keyed to various musical notes, and we made that analogy yesterday of musical notes and tuning. And Murshid says this, people often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words. People often ask me questions which I cannot very well answer in words. And it makes me sad to think they are unable to hear the voice of my silence. Can you imagine? It maps on to this, what I read here, that people, Murshid's giving us an idea that he's teaching us so much in that, about how when we still ourselves, we still our minds, then everything becomes clear. There's not a distortion. And in his day, I mean, it's my understanding, I have it on good authority, that he was quite, Murshid was quite animated and had a great humor. But there were other times where he was perfectly tuned and stilled. You get a little sense of that in the photograph if you go downstairs into the bazaar of the Zikr. It's titled The Zikr. Have I told you the story about that photograph? Okay, some of you don't know it. That photograph was taken of Murshid by his brother, cousin, Ali Khan, Murshid Ali Khan. And you saw Murshid, if you look at that photo, he's sitting. Notice the delicate quality of the hands, the way they're sitting on his knees, and his posture, and he's in, I can tell you that it's in a black and white, but he's in his gold robe, and they have just performed the zikr of an icon. And he was in a very elevated state of consciousness. And I understand that Murshid Ali Khan called his name, and he looked, and that photograph was taken. So if you look very deeply into that photo, you get a glimpse of the atmosphere of that zikr and of his state. There is such great equipoise in that photo. And again, there's something about the way his hands are so beautiful and delicate. You can see that he was very present, but touching very lightly the earth at that moment. It has to do with mystic relaxation. From yesterday, can anyone tell me how many rhythms that we talked about? Three. And can you describe those rhythms? Again, you don't need to use the words that were used in the paper, but can you remember the experiences that we had during the breath practices and what came for you? Because this will help you remember and integrate. And I'm not interested in giving you information. I'm interested in perhaps helping illuminate some of Murshid Anayat Khan's teachings so that you can make them useful in your everyday life. Does anyone? Yes, Ayaz.
The third one was zigzag.
The third one was zigzag, yes. Chaos and building energy. And it also had other things that it had in it, that it possesses, that energy?
It would break a routine. I quite took to that.
It would break a routine.
Any routine or rut, or I got to get, I'm doing the same over and over, and this can shatter it. Perhaps momentarily. But go from there, rebuild.
Absolutely. And it has that aspect of being a destructive force, but there are some things that we do want to, you know, get in there and kind of break up. If there's congestion or blocks, we definitely can use that breath to kind of help move things, right? So although it's called a destructive force, we can see where that can be beneficial. Even in nature, we see how those forces are at play. So new things can come forward. So that was the last rhythm that he talked about. What were the other two? Noor Salima and Rahim, was that you speaking?
I was direct.
A direct, yes. And did we find uses for that direct breath, using the breath and directing it in a certain way?
Power, intent.
Okay, Noor Salima? Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely one of those things that we can, in the papers that exist in the collective interviews of Anayat Khan, he's telling his close disciples how to use that breath I wanted to talk about that a little bit today, because he talks about, well, what can we do it? Instead of let's, I don't want to explain it, let's just do it. So let's sit for a few moments. And Anayat Khan tells his students, we are his students, direct your breath to the soles of your feet. Now direct your breath to the center of your forehead, where it might be called the third eye area. Direct your breath there. Now direct your breath to the palms of your hands. And now direct your breath to the area around your navel, the solar plexus area. And now direct your breath to your heart, the center of love, harmony, and beauty. Now direct your breath, if there's any place in your physical body that is has any little tension or, you know, is a little uncomfortable, use the breath there. Direct the breath there. No need to do anything, just direct one's attention and breath to that area. That's all. And now, using the breath, bring about a cool breeze upon yourself. Feel refreshed. Just release it all. Just let the concentration be at ease. Any observations? Yes? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could someone else, or can you?
I'm drawing the breath into the uncomfortable spot of my body, which is my shoulder. The pain actually intensified.
Uh-huh. What do you make of that? Could be. I have asserts. Anyone else have that experience? Or the opposite?
I have the sense of breathing through the neck, breathing through the heart, and breathing through the forehead. It wasn't a one-way direction, it was an interaction.
Holly Cotter?
I just noticed it was got so much deeper inner than the heart of the third eye and the solar plexus. Say the hands and the feet felt kind of a little external, even though I could feel them. I certainly didn't go as deep and start kind of fading away. I was concentrating on the hands. Any sensations that arose? Cabrilla?
A warmth in various places. And I also, I have a different, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but I have a different experience with the, it wasn't a pain that I was in, but just a tension. And that melted away. And instead of intensifying.
I've been doing this quite some time. breathing into it. And the voice is just a pleasure for someone. Mm-hmm. Or sooner or later, you have to go up with it.
Yeah, it might, sometimes when things are coming to the surface, you know, they often are worse, and it's perhaps ready for some kind of release. It'd be interesting to know if you continue, if you can either receive some information about that pain there, what that's a signal of, and see if that can be released or transformed in some way. What do you think, just to, you know, speculate, why would Mersha prescribe as part of the training of a healer to be able to direct our breath to these different areas? That's very true. And why these areas?
To create opening for powers.
Okay, an opening.
Most of them are energy centers. Most of them are energy centers, like chakras.
I was just working on the theory that energy falls up. If you're thinking about a certain area,
and what do the feet do?
Stand on the earth.
They stand on the earth. And they keep us grounded. And if we can use that energy, you know, every step can become a prayer, can be offered to healing. You know, Mershid, he went to Norway many years ago, and the students that invited him there were a little ashamed because only 6 people showed up for Mershid's talk. And he said to them, "I didn't come here to teach people. I came here to magnetize this earth." Feet. And what about the Ollie Cotter, yes?
This may not relate, but it just come to my mind recently. You know, the picture of the white Tara that was given on his birthday, it was an exquisite white Tara. And I could maybe say that this just reminds me of why that painting, she has an eye painted here, is actually long and sideways. Eye here, and she's just smiling. She's got an eye in each hand, and she's got one on the bottom of each foot. Mm-hmm. It's probably related somewhere in there to that.
It probably is.
You know, just yes. That emphasis. It's almost like a. It's almost like an eye, maybe. You know, to really.
Yes, and she also has a beautiful jewel here and here as well. The traditions are, when you go into Mershid's teachings very deeply, you see indications of the unity of religious ideals, really, it's there. So this center, why would we want to activate that center?
That's the spiritual center.
The spiritual center, okay. What else?
It controls the body.
It controls the body, okay. This center, it's the heart, okay.
Is there intuition that comes through there?
Insight. And the hands? Well, the hands are really like an extension to the heart, aren't they? They're like our wings. and this center. Don't think here. Breathe into the center and see what comes from this area. Balance. Okay. Raheem? Can't hear you. Yep. Will, courage, determination. What else? Ali Khadr.
I think of it as an angle.
Yeah. So all of these centers have a play in working with healing and being able to work with these centers, again, directing the energy through these various areas, you know, can have various effects on people. Again, this isn't about healing, but this, hopefully illuminates or illustrates for you a little bit how by directing the breath, you can activate certain parts of your own body, which of course is the prescribed way to learn healing through what Murshid teaches us, is how to do this first within oneself. We understand the effects and then we can work with that in a more external way with another self, so to speak. So that was the second one. And the first one was? That we talked about yesterday? Someone said something? Mobile or?
Spreading.
Yeah, to have a greater influence. Did anyone think about those after we talked yesterday? Yeah? Was it helpful? Could you apply it?
Practicing it?
Good. I'm sorry?
Talk about the two and then three and the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you use it?
Not that I remember that wall during the conch.
And what happened?
There's a focus and kind of like just get to it a little more speed and just feel like it's better in focus.
Oh, that's so good. Yes, that's really what that does. Really what that does. Very clear. Did you use it while you were walking too? Did you feel like you were just being sort of propelled? And the posture changes, doesn't it? It's so extraordinary. I mean, I find that I sometimes do this and it lifts me up. Yesterday, for those that weren't here, we talked about this rhythmic breath and walking pattern of breathing in two steps and out three steps, in two steps and out three steps. I would really advise you just see what that does. Just take a little walk after the session. See how that influences your rhythm, your breath, your concentration. It becomes more effortless. And again, part of mystic relaxation. If we can use the breath and use the rhythm to help us, it takes less sort of personal will and energy and volition. Thank you. You're all very good students. I remembered.
Could you just repeat the reading practice for the number three, the last one? Is that all up here?
The chaotic breath?
No, the first. I'm sorry. The low spreading.
Spreading.
Four in and four out.
It, you know what? It goes in every direction. Just consider it a 360 degree breath. And Carnie, so I know you understand this because I think you're an educator, yes? So you know when you have to, when you're working with a lot of people in a room, it's very important to have this greater sphere of influence. And this breath can help create. We've been talking, we went at Rahima's class, we were talking about the basket or the container. And it creates a nice container for people to exist within or coexist within. So that creates, if you do, and any of you do any public speaking, that's the kind of breath you want to use. maybe even in performance to some extent, you go between that directed breath and the stretch breath, because you know that you're sending that energy and that breath out, you can have a greater sphere of influence. Does that make sense? Good, thank you for the question. So this is day two of mystic relaxation, and we talked about and hopefully had some experience of those three breaths. And today it begins with a story. And it goes like this. There was a king who, when a certain problem was brought to him by his ministers, used to say, "Read it again." And the minister would read it again. Maybe after four times, he would stop him and say, "Read it again." And the minister would do so. And after he had heard it three times, his answer would be perfect. But what do we sometimes do when we converse with people? Which is very interesting. You can hear him saying that. He's really teaching. But what do we do when we converse with people, he asked. Before the conversation has stopped, we have answered them. So impatient are we, and eager to answer, and excited about it, that only 1 in 100 people stops to listen to what the other has to say. And what often do we feel? Which breath, when we're conversing with someone like that, which breath do we find either ourselves getting into or the other person's in? Which one? The cat, and then, oh yeah, I get that, oh yeah, oh I understand, oh, and did you do this, and isn't it true? Right? I mean, by the time you're finished, you just can be completely exhausted. It's like, oh my God, go away, shut the door.
No, you're fine.
It's true. Well, you know, and it happens, doesn't it? And Murshid goes on to say, and Icons goes on to say, it is the wrong rhythm, the chaotic rhythm, which brings about chaotic results. Where does war come from? From chaotic action. When there is chaotic action, nations become involved in war. By chaotic action, the whole world may be involved in war. People doubt the religious belief of Christ having saved the whole world. They cannot understand it. They say that man saves himself, but they do not realize that one man can ruin the whole world and one can save it. They do not realize that one man can ruin the whole world and that one man can save it. It is by rhythm that he can save the whole world. When there is a chaotic influence, it works like an intoxicating drink in thousands of people. No, it's true. If you watch the news, it happens there. A I think it was Mansoor Johnson. Perhaps you remember Ollie Cotter. I remember hearing him tell a story. He was driving Murshid Sam somewhere. And they came upon a very tragic automobile accident. There were people that were hurt that had been pulled from the cars. There were ambulances. And Mansoor asked Murshid Sam, would you like for me to stop? And he said, no, we don't need to hold that impression. We need to hold the impression of wellness and wholesomeness. Drive on. Friends, this kind of wringing one's hands and the environment, the people, the war, whatever. What good is that? I ask you. If that makes you feel hopeless and helpless and powerless, put it out of your mind. Offer a breath that can be directed towards some beneficial resolution of oil spills or wars or devastating natural disasters. People don't need our sympathy, but they need hope and faith and prayer. This is where the directed breath can offer something, a vibration. We are so limited in our senses. You know, we're a very limited species. We only see things this way. But you know, other species that are with us, they see things entirely different. Why do we think our perception of the world is the accurate one? It's very limited. But this is really mysticism. This is mysticism of vibration. And thought is vibration. Form does follow thought. Actions do follow thought. We could run around the whole world trying to save it and be very exhausted. Or in this mystic relaxation, we can offer a vibration that can be of so much benefit. Does that make sense to anyone, or does that sound like wah, 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 relaxation? Amen, sister.
I'm a big worrier, and when the shit hit the fan, and I was needing guidance, that was the best guidance I ever got in my life. Was, hey, elevate your thoughts and direct positive energy that way, and get out of the grief and pain and suffering, because it's not helping anyone. It's not going to help anybody do anything.
Amen.
Negativity just reflects negativity back. So when you put it out, you get more of the same thing back to you.
It just expands too.
There's a poem, and I have to confess I've been taking my mystic relaxation early in the evening, so I'm not here for the whole evening program, but the Rumi poem in which this whole retreat is based on is On One-Handed Basket Weaving. Has that been read in the evening?
Not yet.
Not yet. Well, I don't know if I want to give away the punchline, but I will. I mean, it's this whole story, which is really, in my view, it's just my limited view, but I believe that in that poem, there's the whole path of initiation that's chronicled in it. And at the end, there's a misconception of an action that someone took that resulted in the cutting off of their right hand. And the person believed that it was that, the will and action of God. And as a result, with surrender, this person was found, you might say metaphor, I think it's a metaphor, but again, that's just my perception or interpretation. And the person is found weaving these beautiful baskets with one hand. The greatest misfortune in one's life can be turned into the greatest fortune there is. Whatever creates the greatest pain in your life is the greatest opportunity for your enlightenment. Let it be so. You know, the people that were able to survive the concentration camps were the ones that had hope and faith. The Turkish nation was greatly depressed on one side, and the wars had made the country very poor. With nothing but disappointment all the time, it had gone down and down. And then there came one man, Kemal Pasha, and his rhythm put life into thousands and thousands of dead souls who were waiting for some result, hungry from lack of food, disappointment with every effort. And one man brought cheer to them all and picked up the whole country. We can see what happened in Italy, where every action was powerless because so many different ideas and parties. There was no united effort, no concentration. You know Italy's a new country, right? Does anyone know when Italy became Italy? It was all these little teeny villages. Do you know? Does anyone know? Yes. I think that it really became very solidified with the president, though, in the 1900s. It's a relatively recent event. There were all these little villages all operating autonomously. I think they had their first president, maybe even as late as, I don't know, in the middle of part of the century. It was a very kind of recent phenomena. So he's speaking of this here. There was no united effort, no concentration. After the fatigue of the war, there came one man, Mussolini, who lifted up the thoughts of the whole country. And this is only the outer plane. In the spiritual plane, the effect is still more powerful. Only those who work on the spiritual plane do not manifest to view. Only those who work on the spiritual plane do not manifest to view. Are there any people here that remember or still recite the guardian angel prayer? This is what he means. Do you invoke your guardian angel to help you? You know, there's a passage that says that there is an angel appointed to us at our birth and travels our whole life with us. As a child, and I still say that prayer in the morning and in the evening, Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here, ever this day be at my side to light and guard and rule and guide. Remember that. The spiritual plane They may not manifest to view, but you have your angel with you all the time. Speak to that angel. When there's trouble, you ask that angel to go speak to the other person's angel and see what happens. You can send them ahead of you as an emissary. Seriously. You know, Joe and I were recently hosting a Moroccan scholar, and she got trapped here because of the volcano. She was supposed to go through Paris, and there was no way. She was completely detained. You know, everything was closed down. And I said to her, you know, we talked, and it was just a lovely woman and a really beautiful soul and felt very much like a sister. And I said, Rashida, you know, it's a blessing. We just have to take it that way. And the day she left, it happened that she was here as a scholar for the college where I teach, and so they were working all the time trying to get her out, you know, which also was a little bit of concern because, well, if you go ahead, do you get detained somewhere else? And also, are there problems with airplanes and things? And I said to her, I gave her a little bookmark of St. Teresa the Little Flower, who's one of my dear, dear friends. And then I said to her, okay, on loan, I'm sending my guardian angel with you, and you're going to get there. And do you know, she had a very quick connections, the way they had to book her flight. Everyone she made just like that. She got, in no time at all, we're getting a letter from Morocco. She had made it all the way. Said, okay, send the guardian angel back now. You know, they're here working for us. Do we remember? Do we remember? What happens in the political world is known, but in the spiritual world, great things happen, and they are not known. But their influence is most powerful because of their rhythm. Are you doing okay? Are you with me? Is the rhythm okay? Is it cooler here? We tried to set up the fans differently and the space a little bit differently. I think it's better. Yeah, and it's hotter today, I think, outside, so this is good. We did a good job. Our master engineer here figured it out.